And now we continue our series, Page Turner, in which we ask local bookstores for their recommendations. Today's is a memoir from the author E.J. Coe called The Magical Language of Others. When she was a teenager, Coe's dad got a job in South Korea. Her mom went with him, leaving E.J. and her brother in California, where the family had been living. During that time, her mom wrote her letters. Those letters form the structure of the memoir. Coe is a poet and also a literary translator, and my next guest says the book is mainly about her relationship with her mother, but more broadly about reckoning with an inherited past. Katie Miller is a bookseller at Antigone Books in Tucson. When I spoke with her, I asked if she got the sense that when Coe reread the letters as an adult, if she found them to have a different meaning or maybe a different translation to her as when she'd read them originally.
I think definitely. I think the whole book is sort of premised on this reckoning with language and the extent to which it enables her to see her mother in a way that she was not able to as a teenager who has basically been left by her parents. So I think the striking and profoundly impactful thing to me about this book is EJ's ability to inhabit language and to use language and the act of translating these letters and also writing about the past that she has been born into and has been carrying with her, to use this as a way to see and therefore to forgive and to reckon. Those two words, forgiveness and reckoning, come up often throughout the book.
Well, it's interesting because when you translate something, and it doesn't matter what kind of document it is, there are the actual words on the page, the literal translation, but it seems as though in many cases there's also almost a secondary translation, sort of the meaning behind the words on the page. It sounds like that is where E.J. Coe was able to get to upon rereading these letters as an adult.
I think that's a really good point. I read an interview with her. She wrote about her translation work, something along the lines of, whenever she translated, you know, the point is not to replicate exactly between Korean and English, that to do that would be to flatten the language, that when she translates, she wants to ensure that she maintains the rhythm and the sort of essential meaning that stays intact.
So this book is in large part about language. I'm curious how you found the language of Coe's writing in terms of, I guess, how would you describe her writing style and how she went about stringing all these different stories together?
Yeah, you can tell she's a poet. The words and the images have that sort of incisive brilliance and vividness that you would expect from a poem. And I don't know if it would be helpful maybe to actually read a short passage that I think would convey her writing style better than I could in a description.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. So this passage appears pretty early on in the first chapter of the memoir. Okay. So in 1993 at Santa Clara University, I was 5 and my brother 9 when my heart broke with love for my mother on the grass lawn under the palm trees. She wore a red 3-piece suit with sharp notch lapels, hair blown dry with a round brush. She stood a prisoner of her own light. A year before, my father, the youngest of 6 brothers and 1 sister, hauled around a crimson brick called the Webster's New World Dictionary. My father attended Santa Clara University for computer science, used the dictionary to learn English. My mother worked. He studied in the library. They decided together that his degree would be important one day. 6 feet tall, 140 pounds, his shirts and pants were loose, yet he never complained. He said to me in a calm voice shaped by years in Korea's compulsory military service, "Some believe that if we're not smart like your mother and brother, we can't accomplish things. But we can if we are, 1, funny, and 2, humble." After he graduated and we took photographs under the trees, my father began to work and my mother came home early, the resounding clamor of her unshackling. We moved out of Sunny Hills, 15 miles, to a house in Fremont, and my father fitted his beautiful wife with his class ring, 1993 engraved in gold, mounted with a red ruby. That passage struck me for a lot of reasons, but I think the clarity of the images is one of them, and also the surprisingness of the language and the way that she uses it in a way that's just slightly outside of what you would expect.
It kind of seems as though throughout the book, we almost watch Ko try to understand her mom's relationship, especially with herself. But especially based on the passage that you read, it seems like maybe she also gains a better understanding of her parents' relationship as well.
I think that's definitely true. There are moments in the book where she, especially towards the end, where she is able to see their relationship in a way that she couldn't as a teenager. But I do think, to me at least, the sort of crux of this book is her relationship to her mother, but also just what it means to be a mother and what it means to be a daughter. The very first line in the book, it opens with one of her mother's letters, but then her first line is, "The present is the revenge of the past." And then she says, "There's a Korean belief that you are born the parent of the one you hurt most." So the whole book is sort of this reckoning with this role that she has inherited in a lot of ways, and that mirrors later in the book. She writes about her maternal grandmother and also her paternal grandmother. And you sort of realize that in a lot of ways, her relationship to her mother parallels her mother's relationship to her mother, that there's a sort of cyclicality there that she is staring at head on.
All right. That is Katie Miller, a bookseller at Antigone Books in Tucson. We are talking about E.J. Coe's memoir, The Magical Language of Others. Katie, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.